claws the eyes and pull like a dog.
And a new Irish record for Phil Healy, 22.99.
Christy Cooney hands over the Sam Maguire Cup to Graham County, Cork All-Ireland champions for the seventh time ever.
Hello and welcome to the Star Sport Podcast. My name is Jack McCarran of the Southern Star, and I'm joined as always by Star Sport editor Kieran McCarthy. Before we kick things off, I'd just like to give a gentle reminder to our listeners and viewers to please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and YouTube. We're chatting club football and hurling today with Bandon goalkeeper Pat Prendergast, and dare I say it, looking forward to the yet-to-be-confirmed club season ahead. We'll also catch up with ex-Munster player and coach Laura Guest about the news that Dunmanway's Darren Sweetenham is set to leave the province to join Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle in the top 14. But Kieran, let's quickly touch on Ireland's dismal 1-0 loss to Luxembourg on Saturday. There's not much more left, really, to be said about it, but I just wanted to get your own thoughts 3 days on from the game.
You really are a merchant of misery, Jack, to start off this podcast talking about that game. It was absolutely dismal. It was atrocious to sit down and watch it. Coming off the back of the Serbia performance a couple of days earlier, like, I know Ireland lost that game 3-2, but there were some shoots that you could hang a bit of hope off in that game. Ireland put some decent passages together again, but they were just lacking in class. And last Saturday night against Luxembourg, it's a very telling stat when the only Champions League player on the pitch was a player from Luxembourg and he ended up getting the goal. Like, that shows how far Ireland have fallen in recent years. And that's no secret either. I suppose that mismanagement off the pitch is now manifesting itself on the pitch. But still, whether it's a sense of entitlement or whatever, you'd still think, oh, Ireland are good enough to beat Luxembourg, but obviously we're not. Like, you'd hate to think what'll happen when you travel over to Luxembourg in a couple of months. Like, they'll be hoping to do the double over us. It was just a very, very poor display. And there was very little positives from it. But Zuna in goal was decent, in fairness to him. He was a young fella. What is he? 18, 19 in goal. Yeah. He kind of handled himself pretty well. But out the field, there was nothing. And I know there are injuries. Like, Conor Horan wasn't involved. And you have a lot more players weren't involved. But still, You would think on paper that Ireland could beat a team like Luxembourg, but it shows where we are right now. So it looks like I don't have to put in for my holidays in Qatar in 2023 or apply for a press pass, because I'll be going nowhere that summer or winter.
Just to pick up on the point you made there about how the mismanagement of Irish football has affected things on the field now. And I suppose excuse is probably the wrong word, but that's a line that's been trotted out to defend the Stephen Kenny era, because a lot of fans and the likes of myself and yourself were both trumpeting the benefits of having Stephen Kenny take the job. But now that it's not going great, he's been defended with the line, oh, it's actually down to the mismanagement of Irish football over the last 10, 20, 30 years even. But is it fair to say that the likes of Martin O'Neill when he was in charge, Giovanni Trapattoni when he was in charge, and more recently Mick McCarthy, that when things started going sideways for each of those coaches, the blame was put firmly on Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, on Mick McCarthy and on Trapattoni and their style of play? They were never really given the outlet of, ah, well, look, Irish football is a bit of a basket case, so, you know, it can't really blame the manager. And now it's a sense that as Kenny was such a popular choice and now it's going wrong, people like myself included, I include myself in this, are looking for any way possible to defend him, because you don't want to admit that maybe we were wrong all along. And the fact of the matter is, Mick McCarthy and Martin O'Neill and Giovanni Trapattoni's pragmatism was in fact the only way. Is there anything in that?
I think what's always working to Keane's advantage, if you could say that, is that champagne football has come out during his reign in charge. So we've all got the chance to look behind the curtains and see what exactly was going on in the FAI, and you're kind of reading that book with your jaw kind of hitting the ground. So we know what was going on behind the scenes. And so I suppose it's pretty easy then just to say, okay, it's not Keane's fault. It's what's happened behind the scenes. But there is, like I said, that mismanagement of of Irish football. Like, if you look at the debt Irish football is in, all the headlines on the front pages for all the wrong reasons over the last couple of years. And that is manifesting itself on the pitch in terms of the players we have right now are not good enough to qualify for European Championships or a World Cup. And you have to look inward at the FAI for that. Why haven't we the players coming through? Are the structures in place? If not, why not? What can be done to better that? But just on Stephen Kinney for a second, I think we all saw him coming in as our great white hope on the back of a white stallion, and he was going to wave his magic wand and we'd be playing tippy-tappy football and putting together these superb triangles, and Xavi and Iniesta would be looking at Ireland saying, Jesus, those boys can play football. But sadly, that's not the case. Stephen Kinney, he's under pressure now. And you've got, what is it, 10, 11 games in, he's still looking for his first win before the goals against Serbia there. We've gone, was it 670 minutes or something like that without an international goal?
And those goals were celebrated as though we'd almost won the game in a 3-2 losing effort. We were like, oh, we've turned the corner. And I was as optimistic as anyone.
I think we all reveled in that moral victory where Ireland got a couple of goals, even though that second goal, was as scrappy as they come. And we were beaten by a couple of top-class goals by Serbia. So Kinney is under pressure. Like, they're playing Qatar now next. If that doesn't go well, I don't think he'll lose his job, but he needs to turn things around quite quickly. I presume he'll be... they've given him their vote of confidence. They'll back him for this campaign in a way, because...
because they can't possibly sack him because he's on a contract worth several hundred thousand euro, and the FAI aren't really in a position to cut a contract short.
When you say it like that, yeah, it is
nothing. I just want to put on the record as well that I would be in your camp of giving Kenny as much time, definitely this campaign, and letting him at least finish the job he was signed up for.
I think so, yeah. I think he needs, like any manager, he needs a full strength squad, or as close to a full strength squad as possible, to get his best players on the pitch and then put his plans in action. Even for the next game, a couple of players have pulled out, so he's been dogged by injuries since he's come on board. Then there was COVID stuff as well. So hopefully we've hit rock bottom. The fear is that we haven't, that it could get even worse. So once we don't finish bottom of the group, I think that could be progress, seeing what we've seen in the last couple of games.
Yeah, and you mentioned that we have already hit rock bottom, losing to Luxembourg in a qualifier, I suppose. Maybe 10 or 15 years ago would have been seen as a much worse result. But I look at this Qatar game, now we're recording this on the Tuesday before the Qatar game, and from what I've been reading and hearing, like, Qatar are no mugs either. And I know it's only a friendly, but it would really add insult to injury if we were to finish this three-game run by losing to the Gulf nation of Qatar, which, you know, not known globally as a footballing powerhouse. I know they're going to host the next World Cup, but I wouldn't be claiming that the Luxembourg game was rock bottom just yet. We'll see how this friendly with Qatar goes on Tuesday evening. Hopefully there'll be some positives to take out, but maybe we'll score a worldly of a goal and we can all say, oh yeah, well look, you can see the possession football is starting to come to fruition, because we had 7 passes before James Collins headed that one past the Qatari goalkeeper. But anyway, watch this space, Kieran. Let's move on then to talk about something we haven't talked about in quite a while on this podcast, and that's club football and hurling. The reason we haven't spoken about it is, of course, because there has been no club football or hurling for some months now, and we still don't even know when it's going to return. But the hope is it will return at some stage in the next 6, 10, 12 months. Who knows? But regardless, you had a great chat with Bandon's goalkeeper, Pat Prendergast, and it really just kind of brought to mind how important the return to club action is.
Yeah, the good news is when the club season does return, that Pat Prendergast will be between the posts for Bandon again. He's 40 years young now, he told me. He's turning 41 later in the summer. He's had an incredible career at Bandon. He made his adult debut back in 1997. So this is his 25th season of playing adult football for Bandon. And he's been, what an incredible servant he's been over the years. The fact that he's still Bandon's first choice goalkeeper for their senior footballing hurling teams is a testament to him and his skill. And if you go back to 2004, he was in goal for the Carberry senior football team that beat Bishopstown in the county final that year. So he's he's put together an incredible career and he's not finished yet. And I just thought it's a good time to catch up with someone like Pat, because like you said there, we don't know when the club season will be back. Every GA player and every sports player in West Cork and the county and the country is itching to get back on the sports field in the next couple of months and do what they do best. And I think it even makes it harder when you look across the water to see the lockdown lifting there on Monday, and you see kids back on the pitches and adults back on the pitches and the golf courses open and so
on. Not just kids. I saw the leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, playing five-a-side last night.
In a Donegal top.
Oh, but it was so sickening to see an adult man playing five-a-side, whereas I'm still kicking my football off the side of the house every chance I get.
So, yeah, so just a chance to catch up with Pat, who's a great character, anyway, and just chat about his story. And even he offers advice for young goalkeepers coming up. And who better to learn from than a top-class goalkeeper who's been between the posts for 25 years and who plays both football and hurling at senior level. So Pat was in great form. Like I said, he's a great guy to chat to and a great guy to catch up to. And the big headline for Bandon sports fans is he's not going in a way. Pat Prendergast will be between the posts again this year. We're delighted now to be joined on the Star Sport podcast by Bandon's well-known goalkeeper, Pat Prendergast. Welcome to the podcast, Pat.
Oh, thanks, Ciarán. How are you, man?
All good here. You took part recently in a Cork GAA webinar. It was on club football goalkeeper development pathway. And I'm just interested to get your thoughts, Pat, on, I suppose, the evolution of the position of a goalkeeper. Like, you made your debut for Bandon back in 1997, which is, what, 24, 25 years ago now. So you must have seen huge changes from being a goalkeeper back then to how the role has evolved to now.
Oh, it's a massive difference, yeah. In regards to that webinar, I was invited onto that. It's great. It was a kind of a brainchild of Conor Coonan, and got a couple of great lads involved: Alan Cork, Graham Annie, Billy O'Connor, Kevin Murphy, Bryn Morgan. Do you know, all lads, you know, good goalkeepers around the place. And I was fortunate enough to be invited in to give my bit of a help out, and that's exactly what we were doing. The evolution and the way people are thinking now, and the way it's a whole different mindset now. Like when I started, you pick the wides off the ground from the 6-yard box, and any score was from the 21-yard box. And everything off the ground. The key came in about 2007, which kind of helped, in my opinion. I think it was a great asset. And then I suppose what has come now, like it was kick, put it down, kick as far as you could, and hope the midfielders were able to win it. Whereas now, every kick out is so precise. You have to be able to hit a wing back running, you have to be able to hit a cornerback, you've got to be able to go forward coming short, you've got to go long when they press up on you. It's just so much the start. So I think with the stat there's 23 kickouts in a game, and if you win your kickouts, win 72% of your kickouts, you win a game. If you lose 50, or if you only win 55% of it, you lose the game. That's the stat that we had there, we realised in the webinar. So it's kind of huge part of it. And then, of course, you can't forget the bread and butter. Your shot stopping has to be good. Your handling has to be good. Your communication is a huge, huge thing. Your backs have to be nowhere to go. And you have to be loud. And you have to be loud for not just for the sake of being loud. You have to be loud with a purpose. And, you know, it's what you see sometimes as coaches then will expect that these young fellas, everyone thinks they want Stephen Cluxton, you know, without giving the young lad the tools to do that. So that's kind of what the webinar is about. It's about getting the young fellas thinking like that and getting the coaches to change their thoughts and how they pick their goalkeepers and how they use them. And that's it's been well received, I think, and it's been a great thing to be involved in. The second part of it was on Wednesday night, the 31st, and that's more into the practical side of it, and that's another step on again, and hopefully come the end of the lockdown we'll be in the pitches. The plan is to go around to a few different centres around the park and do a bit on pitch sessions with coaches and goalkeepers. They'll all be invited. It's all about upping the standard for park goalkeeping, you know.
You mentioned there, Pat, just the name Stephen Cluxton. When people think of Gaelic football now and goalkeeping, Stephen Cluxton obviously springs to mind because how he's changed the game with his restarts. And you mentioned there, that was very interesting stats about if you hit a certain number, is it 72% of key possession off your kickouts, you have a good chance of winning the game. So as a goalkeeper yourself, like, you've obviously seen how important restarts are now and keeping possession. So how important is that in football?
The restart? Mm-hmm. Restart is massive. It's huge. You just have to... It's about, and it's not about just the goalkeeper. It's about having backs who are alive to it, midfielders who are alive to it, wing forwards who are alive to it. Everyone, it's a kind of an orchestrated thing. Groups you like days of a cornerback now running over his back to you is gone. It's up to the goalkeeper's main part to get the ball on the tee as quick as he can. You know what I mean? Get it. That's what. Just another stat in it there. It was back in Cluxton about 2010, they say, and these goalkeepers, they were finding that the longer you left it on the tee, or the longer you took it to get the ball on the tee, the less chance you had your kickouts winning, being successful. So he's now down to 6 seconds, I'd say 6 or 7 seconds, and look, the proof is in the pudding, you know what I mean? And that's what it's about. And just everyone has just switched on, you know?
Obviously, now the role of a goalkeeper, there's a far more responsibility attached to it because it's such a key part of the game now. How does that pressure sit on your shoulders, knowing that you have such an impact on the game and your kickouts and your restarts can sway the game in Bendon's advantage?
Oh yeah, look, if you thought about it too much, you think about the pressure, you get a bit worked up about it, but it's not like you just have to. It's just practice, technique, practice. You know, it's just constantly working at it, constantly working with the backs, constantly working with the midfielders. And then when you get onto the pitch, it becomes muscle memory as such. You know, that it's just, it works hopefully. You know, and we've been lucky enough in the last few years, I suppose, things have worked for us, and, you know, we've had a bit of success. And that's down to, as a collective, you know. If it works, it's a collective, and if it fails, it's a collective, you know.
Like I mentioned earlier, Pat, I said you made your Bendon debut back in 2007, so you've had that longevity ever since. So in all those years, even go back to your underage days, what's the best piece of advice you were given?
The best piece of advice I ever, and it's what I kind of give to a lot of our other younger goalkeepers, is have a short memory. Have a short memory. For any goalkeeper, it's a big thing in my opinion. It's if you let a high ball drop in or make a mistake, first, you lose the head, you run out, you kick it out, and then the second ball comes back in, and the exact same thing happens, and then that's it, you know. So you have to be calm and just have a short memory. Forget about what happened before, you can't think what happened before, you can only think what's coming next. And as a goalkeeper, as the last line, that's all you can do, you know, dealing with what's in front of you.
Take me back to the very start, so, Pat, why did you decide to go in between the posts?
Decide or put? I suppose I was a soccer goalkeeper when I was underage up to about, when I started playing soccer, and I was playing outfield for the football team and the hurling team, and in Colm Mahorn actually was, who Colm, our manager now, would have been, we're the same class in school, but he's a year behind me GA-wise, but Colm would have been our goalkeeper up for 14, and then we got to 16, and management wanted to play the older goalie out the field, so they asked me would I go to goal. I was a soccer goalkeeper and it would suit me, and I'd know where to stand and I'd know where to do this. So I said, yeah, look, I'll give it a try. And that was under 16, my first year under 16. So my second year under 16, then I was going for the minor team as well. And we won the county, minor A county, which was a huge thing for us. We had a great minor football and great minor hurling team actually as well. And that was kind of the start of it, and in there since. And very rarely I get around to feel now over the years, so, you know.
I mentioned the word longevity earlier, and that really sums up your career, because I know I'm going to give away your age now, Pat, but you're 40 this year, and you're turning 41 later in the year. Like, that's, and I mentioned as well that you made your debut back in 2007 for the Bendon adult team, so that's 24, 25 seasons. That's an incredible GA career there. So what's the kind of the secret behind your longevity? What's the magic formula that you can share with the rest of the GA fraternity in West Cork?
Look, I've just been, I suppose, yeah, I made my debut in 97. I played Junior B in 96, actually, against Teddy Holland. I told him I was going back now, Teddy Holland, the great Teddy Holland from Ballinscarty, played against him. But in 97, up to, yeah, I've been fortunate with injuries, I suppose. I've never had too many serious injuries. But most of them were probably when I was playing rugby rather than playing GA. And I've just been kind of lucky enough. I've got involved in, played with good teams and worked hard on what I was doing. You know, I worked hard on my skills and worked hard. You know, a lot of nights spent in the corner on my own, diving for balls and diving in the muck and everything else, and then working kickouts. And it's just, you know, you kind of, I suppose, in the goalkeeper, there can only be one position. So it's kind of been lucky I've been able to hold it for as much in my time. I think I missed about 6 or 7 championship games for Brandon, I'd say, in that time. So, you know, the hard part is this year, I was saying I was in FM starting, then the young fellas, I'm starting my 25th preseason with Brandon this year. So it doesn't get easier. No.
And I suppose what's an incredible part of your story too is you juggle both codes as well. So how do you find that?
Yeah, enjoy playing the games. I went in like that now, same situation. I went first year minor, I was asked to go and goal for a hurling team because I was a football goalkeeper, and I went in, and fortunate enough in 99 we won a bit. We won a county in 99, and time after that I played a few years intermediate, and then I took a bit of a break. I kind of more concentrated on football in the middle, but I was playing junior hurling out the field. I think that really helped my hurling out the field. That few years I played out the field, and then I was asked in 2016 to go back in the goal. The goalkeeper was going with the army, and that's been a whirlwind since as well. We won a county, and I played, got to play senior hurling, and started playing the senior county quarterfinal, which is a massive thing for Brandon. And you know, it's been great, you know.
And how do both games complement each other? Like, can you take something from being a football goalkeeper and apply to being a hurling keeper and vice versa?
Positional wise, you would get bits, you know. There'd be bits of that, and just knowing where you are on the goal. Communication is obviously a thing that transfers both. Now, what I'm finding in hurling as well, as come in the last couple of years, is the quick restarts, the short puckouts, awkward puckouts. It's becoming a bit more footballized that way. You know, the goalkeeper has a lot more influence on the game as well. That's something I tell the younger hurling goalkeepers when they're dealing with. It's like, this is your chance to affect the game. So work on your puckouts, work on your communication, work on stuff like that. So it's kind of, I see a lot more now than it would have been before. I suppose there's a lot more of a coming in the game is, as I said, becoming a bit more footballized, and it's all about puckout strategies and puckout percentages. And
would you be a student of the game off the pitch, then? Like, would you be very much into your stats and looking at videos of yourself in action and even different goalkeepers and trying to glean and learn different bits off watching different goalkeepers and then apply that to your own game then?
You would. You just things like the things like kickouts like that, you know, and puckouts and the quickest way and the best way. And I do a lot of that. I study a lot of the other goalkeepers. And then from learning, from being involved, I was lucky enough involved with good Brandon, the younger lads, the younger goalkeepers that trained with us, and then also with Carberry, when I was involved with Carberry. You know, it's always learning, you know. You're always, every day is a school day, and you're always trying to pick up something else that someone else does, that they might be doing it that little bit quicker than you, or they might, and then you hope to pass on your bit of stuff that you might know as well, you know.
And looking back over the last 24, 25 years, you've packed an awful lot in there, Pat. I was looking at your role of honour list beforehand, and Jesus, it's pretty impressive. Even going back to 2004, you won a county senior with Carberry, and then, like you mentioned there, about the Bendon footballers and hurlers have had been some journey the last 10 years going up to senior in both. What stands out for you, so kind of highlight-wise, if we can almost condense it down to the top 3 or 4, because otherwise we could be here for a week?
No, I've been extremely lucky. You know, I've been extremely lucky over the years. Look, there's been a few great things happen. I suppose the double year of 2016 was probably the top of it all off. That was an immense thing. There was, I think we were on the go 10 or 11 weekends in a row, and didn't even get a break between the two finals because James Donovan was getting married the following week, so we had to play 2 Sundays in a row, and that was. That's probably the highlight of my time. I've had a few other highlights over the years. I remember my first year with Carberry, 2000, going up with Child in the 90s, late 80s, 90s. My two favourite Cork footballers have been John Kearns, obviously, and Stephen O'Brien. And we played the 2000, we played it. My first year, I was about quite into the car, and we played Cork seniors, and Stephen was playing full forward for Cork the same day. And I remember kicking a ball out, and he kind of chipped it over his head, and it was on to 1-6, and someone just running on to it. And he turned around to me and says, "Jesus, that's a way to kick out, you know?" And like that to me, that was a highlight then, you know. This is great. Who's that? That's, he's talking to me, like, this is amazing stuff. You know, that was just little highlights I've had over the years. Then, trying to think, I've had a lot of good times. A lot of low points too. There's been a fair few high points. You know, it's been 2004, obviously, winning a senior football county is a major achievement, you know. And you won it with people like, you'd say, we're a divisional side, but every one of them I'm friends with today. You know, that team was, I could meet them, any one of them, and I'd stop and talk to them. We were very close to the team. We went on holidays together after. We were just, you know, that was a great team. That was a great team. I know Big John has gone, and Pat Bonin from Bean Devere, who were selectors, from St. Columb's, who were selectors in that team, were gone. And, you know, it was just, we were a very, very, very tight group, you know.
And obviously, we're talking about Bendon GAA as well. And the fact that Bendon have senior teams in both football and hurling now, it's a credit to the club and everyone involved. And there's a huge crossover of players in both teams. And even go back to last year, the 2020 Championship, you got to the quarterfinals of both championships as well. So with this new kind of condensed club season, the Bendon hurlers and footballers, you're out every second weekend. So I presume, looking back to last year, that was tough going, was it?
It is. It is. You know, and especially when you probably didn't have a proper pre-season, you know, with lockdown and everything, it makes it even harder. If you get one injury, you're in trouble. You know, one of the, and we, like that, we 14 lads playing, I think, both first teams we had anyway for a while. We're probably going to know a bit now, but for the most part, that's what we have. And if you lose, you look, if you lost the likes of Subaru or Peter Murphy or someone off any of those teams, you know, they're having to replace. Anyway, you know, so it's just, it's tough going. It's tough going, and it's, look, it's just been lucky enough. Managements have been cute enough that they work well together over the years. They're willing to talk to each other. They're willing to, look, this fella needs to be rested tonight. Give him a rest. There's no problem there on the other end, you know, and that has kind of kept been the secret. Well, not the secret. It's been the kind of the recipe for success we've had, you know.
You mentioned there the likes of Mark Subaru and I suppose Michael Callahan from the Hurlers and so on. Who are some of the best club players you played with so over the last 20, 25 years?
Club players? I've been lucky enough, as I said, with Carrie and stuff. I played with Owen Sexton. I played behind him for a long time. Owen Sexton was a dream to play behind. He was a man that, he was gas. If you tied your shoelace, he'd tell you you did that the best. Do you know what I mean? He was just one of these. Brilliant motivator, unbelievable motivator. I go back to 99 hurling team, and we'd have centre back in that team, Dur Donovan, call him Hammer. You've just seen this fella hurl here, and he was so good. He was Cork minor, but he was the fellow who brought in the first day when you threw in a ball, you know, for a clash, he'd get his hurling in front of him and flick it up into his hand. He was a cut to class, no poor old Dur. His early 20s, got cancer and died, and it was a huge loss. I played him all the way up underage, won the county with him in 99. It was a huge loss to Bendon, and we had our 20th anniversary there last year, and he wasn't there. Obviously, he was missing, and you know, it leaves a hole, and it's kind of like, Joe was just, he'd be up there now with people like David. On a personal note, I suppose, the likes of playing with Alan Johnson, Kevin Lucy, my friends, they were great players. They were great servants to Bendon over the years. Just hard. Dan Donovan, another great solid player, you know. But then the younger fellas came in then and played with the likes of Mark Subaru. Do you know what I mean? It's just on Mark's day, Mark is just, there's no holding him. I think, in my opinion, just, he's the best forward I've played with. You know, I played with another good forward, John O'Connell, who did everything as well. You know, he's pace, he did everything. But Mark is just that guy that stepped out as one of the best, as I played, I think probably one of the best quality ability I played.
You mentioned there Alan Johnson and Donal Lucy, and I'm taking back to 2016 now when Bendon had that great season. I remember chatting to you, I think, after the county junior final against Evlera, and you were making the point to me is it was so special for you because you'd won that county playing with friends that you'd grown up with, and you'd started the journey with, go back 15, 20 years earlier. So to share the journey and to share such success with your friends, that must be a huge highlight as well.
Oh, yeah, that's huge. I have a picture there after the football with Alan, myself and Kevin, who was there with the after the Derry game. And that was the, like, we'd won rugby tournament. We'd run rugby competitions together. We'd played rugby all as well together. We travelled along the road in the GAA to football. We were probably predominantly footballers, the three of us, and it was just to win it eventually with them, you know, and to be on the same team as them. And it was just a massive feeling, like, because they're the ones I travelled to every game with. They're the ones we went in the, you know, we tripped the car after a bad match. They were the ones you gave out or gave out with, and you were the ones that celebrated after big games with, and we're still, like, we're a group of friends still all the time. We're best friends and all that, but it's just now they're the fellas I'm golfing with. You know, which is kind of the way we're going, because Alan has packed in last year, the year before, and Kevin packed in before that. So it's kind of, you're losing that as well, and losing these friends, you know. But it's from the restroom, but they were great guys, and they were great, the young people came through, you know.
You're the last man standing, so as you're looking forward to the 2021 season, so obviously right now we don't know when the season's going to kick off or what it's going to look like. So how have you kept yourself ticking by over the last couple of months?
Look, it's been very good. We've had Stuart there, our strength and conditioning guy, in between Cullum and Aidan McCarthy here, who's with us now, the chair's approach. They've kind of got together and they've formulated what they want us to do, and it involves running, and a lot of running and a bit of gym work. And, you know, it's kind of, you have to send your time in at the end of the week. You work on your own. When I say gym work now, it's obviously you're doing it from your home with your, you know, your body weights and stuff like that. But it's been very, it keeps going. Then the odd Zoom meeting, then we sit down and discuss a lot of the kind of tactics and stuff, because the lads want to get on the, when we get on the back of the pitches, we want to hit the ground running. So it's kind of like, it's been busy, do you know what I mean? And then, as I said, the webinar and stuff going on like that, and then with work and with everything else going on. And this year I've kind of gone in as a selector with the minor footballers and Bannon as well, so it's kind of my, you know, I haven't time to not be thinking about it, as I say, but it's been good, you know.
And what is the motivation, so, Pat, to keep coming back season after season? Because you've given so much to Bannon GAA over the years, and Carbery GAA and football and hurling in general, but you keep coming back. And I remember, again, after Celtic Ross, West Cork Sports Star monthly presentation years ago, we were chatting after, and you told me you had no intention of hanging up your gloves anytime soon, and it still seems to be that way now. So what does keep you coming back season after season?
Yeah. Look, as you say, Ben, and it's been good to me as well, you know, Ben and GAA and all that as well, and I like, you know, if I can help out anyway, I can, I'll keep coming back, you know what I mean? It's when, I suppose, the day I feel that, or they feel that I'm not adding to it, then I'll step aside, you know what I mean? But it's the dress, it's the thing I miss, and it's the big thing with last year was I missed the dressing room. I'd miss the dressing room. It's the, you go in there 20 minutes before training, or whatever, that you're right, with me, we're working stuff, like, you're probably running in the door, you're meeting the younger lads, but they keep you young, you know what I mean? The bit of cracking, the bit of messing they're going on with, or what they've done during the week. You know, as I said, I'm home with my wife and my two kids. They're out enjoying themselves on Tuesday and Thursday. You know what I mean? And the stories they'd have, and that's kind of, that keeps you going. And you'd miss that, you know, you'd miss the camaraderie of it, like the banter. And then, look, the working hard for one purpose too, you know, 30 guys working hard for the one purpose is a big thing to step away from, you know. And look, as I said, it's around that time someone wrote, I don't know, yourself was in the toilet of my career, probably around that time, and still probably am in the toilet of my career. But it's just at the moment, look, every year, like last year, I decided I was thinking of packing again, and then you get a boost, and that lasts a week, and then the lads are going training next week, and so you get a phone call then about that, and then you're back in again, and it's hard to get off the wheel, as they say, you know.
And if you look at the Bandon footballers for a second, for the season ahead, you mentioned there, Colm Mahern is back in, and he's bought Aidan McCarthy from Clonwithham, got to the county quarterfinals last year. So that senior A championship is fierce competitive. We saw that last year. It was probably one of the best championships of the lot. So how close do you think Bandon are in the senior A football championship?
I think we're close, yeah. You know, I think we've a north, like, we had a couple of young fellas now, like Ash, going to was involved, was the manager involved, and Derek and John O'Shea and Kevin Lucy, and they, you know, they were able to unearth a couple of young fellas as well that, you know, brought him in through, like said, Dylan Dunham and these and fellas, then they've added something more to it as well, you know. So incorporate that with a couple of the older lads then, and the likes of Mark and Peter Murphy, and these fellas are hitting their mid-20s, do you know what I mean, late 20s, and they're coming into their prime now as well. And it's just, do you know, I think, you know, obviously the likes of Skibber good, like Zero, they got a lot of strong teams there. I know it's not sorted out yet who the winner of that's going to be between the winner of the Cup final last year, but like no matter what, there's a lot of good teams left. There's no bad team at it, and that's the great thing about the grades. And same with the hurling, is there's no bad teams. You can't rest 1 week. You have to turn up and you have to show up, and that's why the new championship is, it doesn't suit new clubs in a lot of ways, but I think it's just a great, the idea of it is great. If you could spread out the times, the idea of it is great, you know.
Like, turning so to the hurling for a second, I think it was Ken Turk who got the better of Bendon in the quarterfinal of the Senior A Hurling Championship last year. So again, how close do you think you are there, Pat, to even going one or two steps further?
That's the most open championship ever, and it was the same when it was the Premier Intermediate, when we were Premier Intermediate. Like, it's a great championship. There's no, as I said, there's no bad teams. Like, we played Charleville, ran them close last year for 45 minutes. They got a couple of soft goals before the water break, and that kind of killed us. But our momentum, but then to beat Fermoy the week after, or after that, and then to draw with Mallow, like, who Mallow have been at that level are very good for years. So, like, you can't. There's no one. I think Father Neil's a very strong one. I'd say that Father Neil's are excellent, will be excellent team next year. But I think everyone else, and like some new stone ourselves, there's just some great teams there, and it's some great. On your day, you can beat anyone. On your day, you can be beaten by anyone. That's, you know, that's what championship should be about.
And I think the good news for all Ben and GA supporters is that Pat Prendergast will be between the posts again for the 2021 season. Come here, Pat, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and best of luck for the season ahead.
No problem. Thanks a million.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.
On Monday morning, the news broke that Dunmanway's Darren Sweetnam was to end his association with Munster Rugby and head off to pastures new by joining La Rochelle and Ronan O'Gara in the top 14 in France. Kieran, you had the chance to catch up with ex-Munster player and coach Laura Guest to speak about the move for Darren and what it means for his career going forward.
Yeah, Laura is obviously someone who knows rugby inside out. She won a Grand Slam at Ireland, played in 3 World Cups, won 10, I think, Interpros with Munster, coached Munster into Interpro success. So who better to talk to about a West Cork rugby story than a West Cork's greatest ever women's rugby player? And Laura feels this is a smart and good move for Darren Sweetnam. He's going to put himself in the shop window with La Rochelle for the next couple of months. So then in the summer, hopefully, and that the hope is that La Rochelle or maybe some other clubs might come in then and offer Darren a contract. If he stayed at Munster for the rest of the season, we don't know how much game time he would have got with Munster, but he's gone over to La Rochelle as a medical joker, which is its injury cover for one of their players who had a crucial operation. So the hope is he'll get game time over there. Laura Guest thinks too that the French league will suit his style of play, that they like to play with the ball a lot more, and that'll play to Darren's strengths. So she feels it's a good move for Darren Sweetnam. It's going to put him in the shop window. And then the big hope is that a club will offer him a new contract in the summer. Because you made the point to me, Jack, when this news broke on Monday, he's only 27 years of age, yet he seems to have been around for years and years and years. But at 27, he's turning 28 in May. He still has a lot of rugby left to be played. And you could even argue that the peak years of his career are yet to come. Look at someone like Keith Earls, as Laura Guests will chat about quite soon as well. He's 33 years of age now, and he's lifting off the ground altogether. So there's a lot of rugby left to be played by Darren Sweetnam. We don't know yet where that will be past the summer. So if the Donnie's hurlers are listening to this and they're thinking they're getting Darren back for the Junior A Championship this year, I'd say hold your powder, lads. Maybe not. We'll just see how it plays out in La Rochelle. We're joined now on the podcast by Laura Guest to chat about Darren Sweetnam's move to La Rochelle in France. And also, it's the end of his association with Munster Rugby. Darren requested an early release from his contract to join La Rochelle in the top 14. So it also brings an end to his Munster adventure. Laura, do you think this is a move that makes sense for Darren right now to go to La Rochelle in France?
Yeah, I actually really do. I suppose he's had his injury problems, I suppose, across the last couple of seasons, and really and truly he hasn't been a regular feature for Munster, despite the fact that he's still an incredibly talented winger. So now I think it really is a great opportunity for him. He gets a bit of control over his chance of getting a new contract with some club next season, you know, and hopefully things go well in La Rochelle. You know, Ron O'Gara might find a way for keeping him there as well, and the French rugby style probably would suit Darren.
Because we were just chatting off air there, and we're making the point that Darren is still only 27 years of age. He doesn't turn 28, I think, till May. And if you look at it, he's played over 90 times for Munster, scored 22 tries. He's had three caps for Ireland as well, and he's had his injury problems in the last couple of years. But he's still only 27, so there's still a lot of rugby left for Darren to play over the next couple of years.
Yeah, you'd think his peak is actually possibly ahead of him, despite the fact that he's had some great years already. I think he's a little unfortunate in Munster in one way, in that it's just a very, very competitive place on the wing there for Munster, with Earls and Conway both ahead of him. You probably can't argue that one. And then, of course, Shane Daly's coming through the last while. But Darren's aerial ability, his defensive work, I think even his defensive tackling, he's not a big guy. But for me, like, his defensive intelligence as well as his ability with the defensive tackle, they're huge. And I think literally Darren could play in any team and do well. He's just kind of got all the skills, but I think he's just been unlucky in that he got injured at maybe the wrong time, if you like, and Shane Daly's beginning to come through, and he already had two internationals to try to be competing with, which was a bit of a challenge as it was, but I'm sure he loves the challenge as well. So hopefully this is just the start of a big move for him.
You mentioned there about Darren's injuries. If you go back to 2019, I think it was, he suffered three hamstring tears in a short space of time, and that almost derailed that entire season. And it's taken him, well, he's probably struggled to come back from that, because of what you said there, Laura, as well, the depth in talent that Munster have in those areas, Earls, Conway, and so on. So moving to France now, La Rochelle, it's a clean slate, fresh opportunity. And you mentioned there, you think he could go well in the top 14. Do you think it's a league that could suit his skills?
I just think they like to play a bit of ball, maybe a bit more maybe than Munster's game currently. And maybe as a winger, Darren feeds off scraps in Munster, and maybe there's a bit more throw the ball around in France. And I actually just do think that he's got great skills. I think he played 10 at schools, and he probably could play anywhere. And even his cross-sporting background probably lends himself to plenty of decent skills. Like in the air, he's excellent for a small guy. And I just think that potentially with a bit of game time under his belt again, you could see a rejuvenated Darren Sweetnam, and I think that'd be brilliant. And I feel like it's nearly a bit harsh to say his injury worries, because I think for the first 6 or 7 or 8 years of his career there for Munster, I don't think he had any injuries. And then, as you say, he got knock on knock of injury that were serious injuries. And, you know, that would be difficult for any player. But he was pretty consistent without any injury for the first spell of his career too. And I think there's... At 27, you know, he's hopefully only just beginning to come into his peak. If you look at, for me, he's a very similar player to Keith Earls. You know, he's of similar size, I suppose. He's got the footwork, he's got the aerial prowess, he's got the defensive qualities of Earls. And you look at him there now, and he's in probably the form of his life now, and he's, you know, 33 or that. And so hopefully Darren can mirror that.
So Darren's importance in the rise of West Cork rugby over the last couple of years, it's a story we've all told countless times, because he was one of the first people through the door. I think he joined Munster, was it back in 2012 for the 2012-2013 season. And back then he was only a young guy from Dunmanway, but he went on to achieve great things at Munster. Like we said, over 90 appearances for the province. But it's more than that, Laura. It's just he showed that it is possible for a guy or a girl from West Cork to go all the way up to Thomond Park. He joined the dots from this rural countryside in West Cork to Munster. And since then, so many more have followed Darren's path. So looking at it from a bigger picture, Darren's importance in the story of the rise of West Cork.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was the trailblazer, to be perfectly fair to him. And, you know, you look at him as a role model for those around him as well. And he's a perfect role model. You know, he's a clean cut guy. He's serious about his sport. He was able to play many sports to great talent. You know, he was an underage hockey international, if I recall, as well. And, you know, he could do everything. And even his ability to focus and kind of impact those in Bandagrammer that have subsequently followed, that list is long as well, even before you add in the Witcherleys And of course, Liam Coombs came via CBC as opposed to via Bandagrammer, but Darren definitely made it possible for West Cork men to think this is possible for me to do. And they've all just started to follow in their droves, which is fantastic for, you know, a massive pocket of Cork, but nothing really rugby-wise before any of these people. And Darren certainly was the first of those that really came through from the men's side of things.
Because if you talk to Fionn Richley or John Hodnett now, they'll always name check Darren Sweetenham as some fella that they looked up to when they saw him at Munster. Because when he joined at Munster and he was starting to find his feet there, they were maybe 14, 15 or 16, and they were seeing a guy from West Cork, from their local community, going on to kind of make an impact at Munster. So it showed that it was possible and it was achievable for someone from West Cork to play at Munster and subsequently win three caps with Ireland too. So like we're just saying there, Laura, he's had such an important part in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to be fair, had Darren not come through, you might only see one or two of those. But like we've been very fortunate with West Cork being very well represented. And hopefully, you know, the future's only brighter and getting brighter, but it's because of the likes of Darren coming through, as you say, at the perfect time in those guys' young careers, because they were 15, they were maybe even from 13 through to 16, and they're very impressionable. And as soon as they could see someone like Darren, and, you know, it's back to the women's sport campaign of if she can't see, she can't be. No different for them. If they couldn't see Darren, they didn't think they could be potentially. And fair enough, they've come through different schools. They haven't all come through Bandon, but at the same point, they've all come out of West Cork because of the fact that Darren came out of West Cork ahead of them. And they said, yeah, I could do that. If Darren can do this, I can do this. And that's something that, you know, West Cork can't thank Darren enough for and definitely can't repay Darren for. But it's to Munster's benefit that those players have come through. And I know that Munster certainly, you know, are grateful for Darren and have always rated Darren highly. And I'd say Munster, you know, are sorry to see Darren go in one way, but I would say very much wish him well, knowing that this is a great move for Darren. You know, just coming towards the end of that contract and a new contract or a contract running out in the summer and Munster financially not being able to kind of maybe offer him something. I think this is the next best thing for Darren and possibly a really lucky bounce if he can make the most of it and get across and get some game time. I think it was unfortunate, but I think he missed out on being able to be added to their European Cup list just by a matter of hours, maybe, or a day or so. And I think that's a little unfortunate, but hopefully, look, he'll have a good run in the top 14 and maybe that'll be a blessing in disguise in the end as well without playing a massive amount of rugby if he was to go in and play week on week for in the top 14. It's quite intense anyway. So maybe this would be a blessing, but hopefully it gives Darren a perfect opportunity to take a bit of control over his next step.
And an important link too is Ronan O'Gara is obviously a head coach over in La Rochelle, and he'll obviously know Darren well from Munster and he'll have the inside track there. So it's probably helping Darren too. He's going over to a club with Ronan O'Gara there, a fellow Cork man. So they'll be able to understand each other pretty well, talk about home and all that. But Ronan O'Gara will also know all about Darren Sweetenham. So that should help as well.
Absolutely. You think it can only help. And even at the minute, there's so many Irish players in the top 14. You'd nearly think that no matter who he plays against, he'll come up a guy he knows, you know, be it former Munster teammates, be it former competition in Leinster squads and different bits. But like that, you're right, it can't hurt the familiarity of Ronan O'Gara. I would imagine even Ronan O'Gara had a bit to do with, you know, knowing that Darren's contract was coming out. And I'd say Darren was cleverly and carefully chosen, if you like. And you know, it's really great for him, as I say, and I think, you know, it's an opportunity that he certainly will be trying to make the most of. And, you know, even just looking in, I don't know Darren personally, but looking in, you know, Darren is the kind of guy that has a massive work ethic, and I think he'll make the most and every shot possible of making this a success. And hopefully, you know, things go his way and hopefully he gets a run without a few injuries and he can make a big impact in La Rochelle. And I think they're a club that are on the up as well. And I think O'Gara is a great coach to be going into work on. And I think even if things don't go perfectly in the La Rochelle sense, hopefully Darren can learn something off Ronan O'Gara and you know, add it to his game for wherever he ends up next season.
There's more to come in the Darren Sweetenham story. Thanks, Laura, so much for joining us on the podcast.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Star Sport Podcast, number one for sport in West Cork.
Welcome back to the Star Sport Podcast. And before we wrap things up this week, as always, we're going to quickly preview this Thursday's Southern Star sports section. So, Kieran, take it away. What can readers expect?
It's a good Friday to speak, Jack, but it's going to be an even better Thursday because the Star is going on sale.
Oh, I love it.
We have a really good sports section this week. Some of the highlights, I've caught up with Nicola Tuttle. She was crowned West Cork Junior Sports Star of the Year at the recent Sports Star Awards. And just to chat about her career more in depth and what her future plans are, and especially about the homemade throwing cage and circle that her father built on the farm in Barley in Kilbritton. And we also got Martin Walsh, the photographer, out to meet Nicola. So we have some stunning photos of that homemade throwing cage and circle. And that's literally the playground for a national senior champion. So that's well worth checking out. We also have a superb interview with Bandon horse trainer James DeLay, who is going great guns at the moment. And he had a winner there a couple of weeks ago. So James chats about why he got involved in training and so on and his future plans. So superb read. Lots of good reading in this week's Star, Jack. We have an interview with the Clonakilty and Cork footballer Sean White, and an exclusive picture of the homemade gym that they have in their grandparents' garage up in Sunday as well. The picture includes Sean and his brother Mark White, both on the Cork senior football team. But what really stands out to me is the posters hanging in the background on the wall in the garage. And I'm not going to say any more.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, you'll have to buy Thursday Southern Star to see what the posters were. But let's just say I liked them. We also have an interview with Siobhan Courtney, who's the Castlehaven ladies football captain, just about her career and her journey. We have a story too that will make, I suppose, GA players across West Cork and beyond very envious. I've caught up earlier with John Bobs Daly. He's the well-known St. Mary's hurler footballer who's been living in Wellington in New Zealand since June 2018. And a couple of weeks ago, his club in New Zealand, they won the double in the New Zealand Championships. They won the football and the hurling title. John Bobs got player of the match in the hurling final, and it was the first time in donkey's years or even ever that they won the football. And it's definitely the first time the club won both the football and hurling double at the New Zealand Championships. But even chatting to him, the fact he's in New Zealand, and it's quite ironic that he's as far away from home as he possibly could be, and he's training GAA and he's playing GAA, and his GAA season is finished now and he's back playing soccer. So it's a lovely West Cork story to see.
The worst news you could possibly tell me about, Kieran. The hurling season finishes, the soccer season begins, and he's absolutely loving life. And we're still stuck inside a year after this whole mess started. My God, the more you think about it, the angrier you get.
Not only is he loving life, but he's winning championships. He's winning player of the final awards. And like St. Mary's know just how good he is. Like, he's a top class hurler and a footballer, and he's shown his skills over there too. So that's one for Thursday's Star. And just to point out as well, John Bobs Daly is from Knockanedy. That's the exact same Knockanedy that Phil Healy is from and Orla Cronin. So they're really putting that townland on the map. And he was telling me that his home is literally just across the way from Phil and Joan's home. He said Orla Dinn is just a couple of 100 meters down the road. So if you could find a recipe for success, or what makes a good sports person, I think we have to start to search in Knockanedy. I think it deserves to be honed in. Like, why this little townland is producing all stars?
There's another book there, Kieran. There's something in the townland, maybe.
Or there's something in Knockanedy. I could start a full series. I could roll it all around West Cork. So, yeah, so that's in this Thursday Southern Star. So we've loads. And I think just breaking news, just as this podcast is being recorded, is Kinsale golfer John Murphy has been included on the Great Britain and Ireland Walker Cup team that will compete in Seminole on May 8 and 9. So that's
I think they call it Seminole.
That's my butcher of a pronunciation of a Spanish. I presume it's Spain, is it? Seminole. So John Murphy, the Kinsale golfer, has been named on the 2021 Walker Cup team. So that's good news. So we'll have that in Thursday Star as well. So you can see, Jack, there's a lot going on.
Absolutely brilliant stuff, Kieran. I look forward to reading. I look forward to seeing what posters the Whites have hanging up. And I also encourage readers to keep an eye out for all of Martin Walsh's photographs, because I've seen most of them, the ones that are going to appear in this week's sports session, and they are absolutely brilliant. So kudos to Martin Walsh again. He's been on flying form of late. If you can't make it to the shops to pick up a copy of the Southern Star this Thursday, you can always get a copy online. Just go to www.southernstar.ie/e-paper. And this week's Southern Star will also include a free bumper 32-page home and garden magazine for all the gardening enthusiasts out there. So we can't get out and play hurling or football, but we can get out and cut the grass and weed the flower bed. So make sure to pick up a copy of that as well. Thanks for listening to the Star Sport podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week. If you enjoy these shows, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Slán tomhúil.
Super, super, super.